My next guest is a Boston-based journalist who chronicles the glorious underbelly of American society. And he has spent a lot of time investigating the great con artists of the 20th century. And he writes about one in his book, My Adventures with Your Money, George Graham Rice and the Golden Age of the Con Artist. And the journalist is with me here today. His name is T.D. Norton. Hi, T.D. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me on today.
So I had never heard of George Graham, otherwise known as G.G., but from the way you describe it in your book, he sounds like one of the greatest characters of the 20th century.
Yeah, well, it's fairly interesting that you brought that up because I had never heard of George Graham Rice either before I had started researching the book for My Adventures with Your Money. And the genesis of how I stumbled upon George Graham Rice was I was actually working on a freelance article about con artistry, a magazine piece, and I had researched an article. I'm a serial Googler, and I had landed on a 1934 article from Time magazine. And basically, the gist of the article, when I found it a few years ago, was whatever became of George Graham Rice? He was the greatest con artist of his era. Why aren't the modern con men as charismatic as this guy is? And I had followed the shadow world of confident hustling peripherally, kind of as a hobby. And I said, wow, how come I've never heard of this guy? And it was like an onion. The more I started delving in and the more layers I uncovered about George Graham Rice, I found out what a fascinating and forgotten character that he actually was in the early part of the 20th century. He was front page news basically from 1900 up until the Great Depression. And the reason a lot of people have never heard of George Graham Rice today is, without a spoiler alert, without giving away the ending of the book, his downfall coincides with the roller coaster ride up during the Roaring Twenties, and then the massive crash in the Great Depression. And by the time George Graham Rice went from big time to small time, it was no time. However, in his day, he was the fraudster in terms of scale that we would compare to a modern Bernie Madoff, except the critical difference is George Graham Rice, which was only one of his many aliases, by the way, he operated with the flair and showmanship of P.T. Barnum, the circus promoter.
Yeah, let's get into that. Hang on a second. Let's get into that because there's a lot here. But just to whet my listeners' appetite, this person that you speak of, this George Graham Rice, he pioneered many of today's modern marketing ideas, concepts that are still in use a century later. For example, the celebrity endorsement, using sex as a selling tool, outlandish publicity stunts, telemarketing, customer profiling of all these things. And then he wrote a tell-all book after that. So on the one hand, he did all this to swindle suckers out of their money. But on the other hand, I guess modern advertising is kind of all about that in a legitimate fashion today.
Yeah, George Graham Rice was nothing short of brilliant. And I make the point in My Adventures with Your Money that he could have, had he wanted to apply his intelligence to legitimate business purposes, I think we'd be speaking about him in a totally different light today and not the nefarious shadow world that he occupies in con artistry. But you ticked off a list of some of the things that he pioneered. And to set the scene for your listeners, this goes back 100 years ago when if you were affluent enough to have a telephone installed in your house, you were thrilled to hear it jangle. You didn't care if it came from what we would know today as a telemarketer calling and trying to sell you something. George Graham Rice pioneered telemarketing. He was one of the first sales persons to instruct his staff to ask people, may I have your telephone number, when they completed a transaction in roughly 1902.
Yeah.
And later on, he was the forerunner of what we would call customer profiling and data mining today, except George was a little more blunt. He called it his sucker list, and he just cultivated a list. By the time he died and they found this list, it had over 200,000 names on it, and he first started cultivating these names when he was a racetrack horse tipster, and he kept the names as he went out west to dabble in mining stocks, and when he came back to Wall Street to open what were called bucket shops, which were low-rate, cut-rate brokerage houses that never really invested your money. Every time he had a point of contact with these people, your file in his file cabinet grew fatter and fatter, and you didn't realize some of these people were contacted numerous times over decades for many of the different schemes and scams of George Graham Rice. And it might be apocryphal, but it was rumored that he even had subheadings in his sucker list under names like elderly philanthropists and millionaire widows. And he would, in a predatory fashion, he would go after these people.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be satisfied to take you for, if he knew you had $20,000 to give up, he wasn't going to be satisfied if he got $19,000.
Gotcha.
He would go for the full banana.
My guess is T.D. Thornton. The book is My Adventures with Your Money, George Graham Rice and the Golden Age of the Con Artist. So let's learn about one of these cons. I was particularly interested in the very first one where he, I'll let you explain it, but it has to do with racing. And I want to get into one thing that I noticed that made him different. But tell us very quickly about the story, his very first biggest con.
George Graham Rice had gotten out of jail on some forgery charges, and he was basically broke. And he had $7.10 to his name. This was in March of 1901. He was standing on a street corner in New York City, and off in the distance, he spied an old racetrack chum. George was looking for, he was on the hustle looking for marks who were ripe to be suckered. He didn't necessarily want to fleece his friend, but his friend came over to him. His friend was a little bit more down in his luck than George Graham Rice was. George bought him a beer. They got to talking. One thing led to another. And his friend said, hey, I have a very legitimate hot racehorse tip that I just received by telegram from a guy in New Orleans who knows his stuff. And this amounted to insider trading in the horse racing world. George knew that this horse, or had inside information that the horse had a good chance to win at odds of 10 to 1, but he was smart enough to, he didn't want to make $70 off of this transaction, which is what he would have got if he bet the horse straight up, $7 to win at 10 to 1. He wanted untold riches. He wanted a bigger entry into the world of separating suckers from their money. So what he did with this tip was he took his last $7. He went down to what today is known as the Daily Racing Form, the Bible of American horse racing newspapers. He bought a tiny ad in the back of the paper. He ran it the next day. It said, bet your last dollar on the horse's name was Silver Coin. He will win today. I have inside information. And if you like this tip and the horse wins, I have a new horse racing business, a tout service that's in business. And if you like it, this is a freebie. But after that, it'll cost you $5 a day, which was an exorbitant sum in 1901,
right,
if you want my inside information. Now, this scam only hinged on the horse winning. If the horse didn't win and ran off the track, George's advertisement would have gone into the trash. Nobody would have made any money. Nobody would have followed him. But as luck would have it, the horse won, and he won big, paid a nice price. And the next day, when George went to the storefront walk-up that he had rented on Broadway, he was surprised to see that the line extended out the door and down Broadway. He had hundreds of suckers lining up wanting to give him $5 the next day for his next hot horse tip, yeah, and he was off and running in the tout business.
Yeah, so TD, this is what I find fascinating. I think most of us would have taken that tip, taken our $7, and been happy with earning $70 to get us through, you know, the next couple of months back in 1901 dollars. But he had bigger visions. This guy was very smart from the very beginning, and so he started this company. It was totally bogus. He rented some closet of a space. And he got a second tip, and that tip kind of worked out, too. And he built a little bit business until what? It fell apart?
Well, it eventually fell apart because it came under federal scrutiny. Because to back up a little bit, he eventually built up the business to the point where he had so many suckers subscribing to his daily horse racing tips that he was able to give, let's say on a scale of if there were 10,000 customers a day and there was a five-horse race at Belmont Park in New York, he would divide it up, and he would give each of the 2,000 subscribers a different horse. So if you scale it up, every day he was giving out a winner. Some people were getting fraudulent horses that didn't work out, but eventually they landed on a winner, so they stuck with him. And his business was big enough that he was not content to just take in walk-in customers. He went about his business by the mail. And, you know, in 1901 and 1902, it was technically not illegal to commit fraud in the United States. However, the way the government got you was they came in the back door instead of marching boldly up the front steps. If you use the federal mail system, the Postal Service, to defraud people, they would get you for mail fraud. And that's eventually how he went to smash on his horse tout racing business.
You know, it's interesting because you mentioned this idea of having, say, 10,000 customers and five horses and giving 2,000 the name of a horse. So 2,000 out of those 10,000 think that you're very smart. And then you take those 2,000. And you divide that by five, and then, you know, 400 of those think you're a genius. And by the time you get down to it, you've got, you know, whatever, 50, 100, 200, 500 people who think that you can't lose and you can charge them more and more money. That used to be a stock broker scam, by the way. Tell half your customers to buy, half your customers to sell. Half them think that you're a genius after you've done that two or three times. And they can be very powerful. We are very limited on time, unfortunately. The book is My Adventures with Your Money, George Graham Rice and the Golden Age of the Con Artist. My guest is T.D. Thornton. His first book was Not by a Long Shot, A Season at a Hard Luck Horse Track. And again, you want to read about George Graham Rice. I know I personally love stories about these great Carn artists. And, you know, I had some dealings with Bernie Madoff, and I was able to save a number of clients from a Bernie Madoff. So I'm very, very much aware of the dangers of these scam artists. And so I like to read about them. Final words, TD?
I think that one thing that your listeners should keep in mind is that con artists are a cyclical phenomenon. The core methods that they will separate you from your money don't change. What does change is technology and the methods by which they go after you. So George Graham Rice, in his day, it was the newfangled telephone and suckering people by telegrams. And today we do it by the internet. The same scams, the I'm a Nigerian prince seeking some help getting money. Can I use your bank account emails that we all get and have hopefully hit the delete key on every day are no different than something that was called the Spanish prisoner scam that was in vogue in George Graham Rice's time.
Well, I guess P.T. Barnum was right. I guess there is a sucker born every minute.
And, you know, the interesting thing is when I researched that quote out for My Adventures with Your Money, the true con artistry of that is P.T. Barnum never actually said that.
Oh, he never did.
It's attributed to him, but he never actually said it.
Very good. My guest, T.D. Thornton, a Boston-based journalist. The book is My Adventures with Your Money, George Graham Rice and the Golden Age of the Con Artist. T.D., thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Hold on to your wallet.
Take care. Bye-bye. To hear more stories and more interviews, don't forget to join our conversation and also to find out more about T.D. Thornton and his book. Join the conversation at stevepomerantz.com.